Welcome back to the Green Room.
Thank you.
Hello, Marie and Sue. Again. We're here to talk about how we help people with their phobias and fears of small pets and dogs. So, is it people that approach us usually wanting us to help them, or do we go out and help people actively with their phobias and fears? What's your guys' experience been?
On the dog side of life, as a general rule, it will come at us from two different ways. One, it might be that a family has come and they're looking to take on a dog, and it comes to light during the interview process that one of the children is really frightened and that's why they're looking to get a dog. Or we will get contacted through our behavioural advice, dog advice service that we offer. And somebody will say, my niece, for instance, is terrified of my dog. If we can't help her, she's never going to be able to come round anymore. You know, what do we do? So those are the main two angles that we would get asked for advice from.
Do parents always come in knowing their child has a fear or phobia of dogs? Or does it come to light somewhere along the process of rehoming a dog where the child reacts to a dog and it's a shock to the parents?
I think the main time when it's a shock to the parents, which is, I wouldn't call this a phobia, is when it's a puppy that they're interested in and they think that their child is good with dogs, and because it might have met 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 adult dogs in their time, and they think, right, okay, yes, let's get you a puppy. And then we introduce the little land shark, as all puppies are, that runs around and wants to grab hold of clothing, and they've got sharp little claws and they're running around all over the place and they're jumping up. They can be really frightening for kids, and that's when sometimes the parents step back and say, ah. And generally for those kind of situations, we would always advise on a slightly older, calmer dog than a puppy.
So. Well, that's a really good point, actually, because a lot of the time when we hear about children with phobias, a puppy is the first thing that people suggest because they think, oh, it's a baby. Oh, they love everybody. How can you be scared of a baby dog?
Yeah.
But actually, from what you just said, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, and actually kids that have never had issues with dogs before will, up to 9, 10, 11 years of age, I get cases where they won't come downstairs because of the new puppy in the house, because the puppy's going to grab onto their trouser legs or their shoelaces, or they'll stroke it for 2 minutes and then it starts doing all its puppy biting and stuff. They're scary, they're frightening.
And to a young child, a mouth is a bite. They can't really differentiate between the two, can they?
Yeah, so yeah, if you've got a small young child that is frightened of dogs, don't go getting a lively little puppy, because it could just make the situation worse.
That makes sense. Do you find the same with small animals, Marie, in terms of if people are scared of mice, rats, rabbits? Is there any difference between getting a, I don't know what a baby rat's called. Is there a word?
Pup.
A pup.
Yes. Oh, you put me on the spot there. Yes.
So I think for the small animal front, it's more that people have come in thinking they want a small pet, but they're not really sure. So it's not really that they've come in for our, we're really terrified, we don't know what to do. We will get the odd person who's made contact with us and would like that sort of support at overcoming, so wants to come into the rodent room and do a little bit of handling or just stand near and watch them. But in most cases, we generally find that, kind of a bit like what you said, that we find one of the members of family has suddenly appears, actually they are a bit worried about that animal. So, you know, often we'll get the mum or the dad say, they're in charge of it because I don't really like them, which is a really frustrating sentence, because then you're kind of like, well, no, you need to be that actually responsible owner. It's not going to be down to the child on that front. So,
yeah, I owned a hamster when I was younger and I was not a responsible owner. Luckily, my parents did charge of the ownership. But yeah, a lot of people get small pets for their children,
they do.
Because they want to teach them that responsibility and maybe build up to a cat or a dog or whatever. Yeah. But actually, they need lots of taken care of.
They do.
By a responsible person.
Yeah, and they need to learn from that adult how to do it correctly. So actually kind of throwing them deep in, it's just going to be a recipe for disaster. But yeah, most of the time it generally is that they'll come in and, you know, the mum or the dad's a bit frightened of the rats or something like that. But the child has kept asking for rabbits, but they're not quite sure. So from our point of view, we have to just take that time with all of the family members, handle a few different ones, just talk them through about the potential behaviours they're going to see. So for instance, with rats, often actually, if you keep your hand still when they come up to you and sort of smell, they most cases will actually lick you because they want to just taste the salt or taste what food it is. They're smelling you. But often the reaction is to whip your hand away because you think you're going to be bitten. And that's when they get bitten. And then it's those rats bite. Or they're
what,
really
because
scary.
The rat's worried by your reaction?
Well, they think their food's been taken away.
Oh.
So by you putting your fingers near the bars or holding it near and then the rat suddenly comes up to sniff or to lick and then you quickly whip your finger away, they're like, what are you doing? And so they will grab onto it. Whereas actually if you know, we really trying to reinforce just be calm, you know, obviously we make sure it's an animal that we know is, you know, really sound and has been handled lots, to just stay still and let them smell. With small animals, it's so important in particular because they're a prey species that they need that time to just assess you and decide whether you are a threat. And again, I think people always kind of think that, oh, it's just a hamster, it's just a rat, so I'm a bit frightened, but we'll just pick it up. But actually, those animals need that time to just assess and just have a little smell, come up to you, realise that nothing's going to happen again, they can walk away for a few minutes, and then we let the people in really interact with them. So for us, definitely, for small animal interactions, it's always slow, you know, and just sitting on the floor as well. I think we mentioned in part one where the worry is that they will get dropped. And again, you know, because of those sudden fast movements or a chicken suddenly decides to flap its wings, our interactions with small pets, we really can't kind of stress enough how important it is actually for you to just be sitting on the floor, be at the animal's level. You know, I guess the same when you talk to a child, you don't stand above them because it's really daunting. You get eye level with them and sit with them so they can understand that. And it's the same for small animals, to be low to the ground with them, sitting on the floor in a comfortable manner. But if something happened, they did suddenly move and that did make, you know, that phobia or that fear suddenly come out and the animal got dropped, it's on the floor anyway, so it's safe. So yeah, for us, it's handling wise and your approach to small animals before we even focus on what that person's fear is really important. And then we can really start to support the owner into deciding whether that's the right pet for them or not.
So that it really is the fact that they are more scared of us. Like, we will say this about spiders, but they are, as a prey species, 100%. Much more scared of us than we will ever be of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, how many people have actually been seriously injured or killed by a hamster?
You know, I've had some serious finger bites, but that was probably more what I did.
Well, you're going to get the odd little bite, but you're not going to go to A&E from it. But unfortunately, far more small pets have suffered, you know, because they've been dropped or accidentally, because that person's been scared and gone, ooh, you know. So it's really trying to, first of all, help the owner to connect with that animal on that point, that they are just as scared as you. So let's just do this together rather than it's them and me kind of thing. And that certainly is the first step that we go with.
I wish I had this advice when I got my hamster and didn't get it from a pet shop. Well, things might have been different. I might not have got bitten.
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't have got bitten. And when we're working with the dog, Sue, if it's a fear or a phobia, I guess there's a big difference there. How do we start that process with people? If they've approached us or we've noticed the child has a fear and we offer our support and advice, how do we start that process going? Do we just chuck them in with a few dogs,
yeah,
see how
chuck
they get
them in
on?
A kennel.
No, we do take it very seriously, and the first port of call needs to be a doctor's appointment. And we ask that they speak to the doctor about it and ask for the child to be referred to a counsellor, sort of CBT, something like that.
What's CBT?
Cognitive Behavioural Therapy.
Which means?
So it, a lot of it is talking type therapy to get to the root of why they're frightened. But none of us that work here are qualified in child development and human psychology, so we're not going to mess around with that. We are qualified to work with the dogs, and we are qualified to educate people about dogs, but not for their emotional well-being. That's not what we're experts in at all. So quite often the therapist will have a few sessions with the child. They have like a code, most of them, where, I don't know, a scale of 1 to 10, one being they feel absolutely fine and in control, and, you know, 9, 10 being I'm terrified, get me out of here kind of thing. So the counsellor will constantly be checking in, what number are you at, what number are you at, and if the number starts to go up, they know how to deal with that child in order to help them bring the number back down. What we do is we provide the education about dogs, most importantly about how to read canine body language so that you can keep yourself safe around dogs. And we can provide the varying different types, sizes, behaviours, noise of dogs to try and support the cognitive behavioural therapist in the work that they're needing to do. So we kind of work as a team and to get to the point where we can make that person or help that person have some control over their emotional responses, because that's the thing around any animal. You were just talking about with the smalls, as soon as you become emotionally wild and you lose control, you're gonna get some form of response from an animal. They will also go into fight or flight mode. That's what we need to be careful of.
Or they think it's a game and start fooling around, yeah. And that can be quite terrifying, yeah, for a, yeah, child, can't,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you come across any cases, Marie, where you have helped families overcome their fear or started to, because I mean, I guess there's not necessarily a cure for everyone that's got a, yeah, phobia of these animals, but have you reached a point with a family where you've been able to rehome them a small animal and they started off really terrified?
There is a lady that will always stick in my mind, because she arrived, and if I remember rightly, she was with her partner, and we heard them saying they were kind of looking for an animal. They weren't, you know, they weren't at, we are ready for a pet. They were kind of just coming to have a look around and decide if that's where they were at. And I think we heard them at the door of the rodent room saying, not going in there, there's rats in there. And I think it was even myself and one other person said, just, you know, do you want to come in and we can just talk through? Because I think what they needed from a pet, actually, everything pointed to a pet rats being more suitable for them, because that's the thing, what we see, and I guess it's the same with dogs, is people have got this vision of what they think they need from a pet, but when we actually find about where they live, it's in a flat or it hasn't got guard, you know, whatever, actually often we can try to direct them to the most suitable one, and in this case it was actually rats were really perfect for you, so it's a shame. So we spent quite a bit of time just talking to her outside of the room. And the rodent room is quite colourful and quite a calm environment. It doesn't feel like there's rats everywhere, yeah, kind of thing. So, you know, we kind of just wanted to get past that. So she was like, okay, you know, I'll come in. But she literally was by the wall. She was really quite worried about them. So we had a couple of members of staff, just got out a couple at the time. We had some really lovely big chunky male rats, and in most cases actually the big males are actually really docile and they're so affectionate. So we just thought, you know, do you want to just see us handling them and just see how they move? We were with this lady for a good 4 or 5 hours on and off, you know, kind of in and out, just letting her watch them, seeing them. Once she started to see them with the staff, how they were moving, that they're slow, we got to the point that she'd have a little stroke, and then she started feeling confident enough to the point that we actually got her holding them, and by the end of the day she adopted those two male rats.
Wow.
Yeah.
And all I that in a day.
Yes. You know, and she was literally like, I can't believe I've put all this, you know, fear into that, I cannot even be near them. And I don't think she'd come in with I have a fear of rats. She just, it was always a fear that was there. To be honest with you, I can't remember exactly whether something had happened, but it was always there. And coming into the room kind of reinforced that, oh no, I really do not like rats. I don't want to go into that room. But yeah, so we got to the point of not coming into the room to going home with two male rats. We provided her with cage and enrichment, and we regularly kept in contact. And I just remember her just being so chuffed that they were perfect, lovely. Curled up on her lap, and we had lots of updates on the photos. And it was just always one that will just stick in my mind as just being like, it shows that anything can be done, and just taking that time.
You wouldn't get that in a lot of places. If you walked into a pet shop, you wouldn't get that kind of service.
No, you wouldn't. It would be, do you want this animal?
If so, you don't, okay, yeah. Bye.
But I think that's the benefit, actually, in a way, of adopting rescue, small pets and rodents, is that the team are able to spend that quality time. Exactly the same with the dogs. You're able to spend that quality time, find out what their characters are, what they like. And so then when we have these owners come forward who are looking for a pet, we can match that with them, because we can say, this personality would really suit you. And I think when we put that passion and belief into it, then an owner says, I can do it, because we believe they can do it as well. And I think that's what's so intimate about coming through Wood Green, is that the owners really get that time spent with them.
It's a proper personal service, isn't
it? Oh, it really is.
And you're supporting them through all of it.
Yeah.
And what a great personal achievement for her as well, having overcome that fear or phobia of rats.
Yeah.
And she must feel, I can do anything now.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a great booster. And historically, most interesting people who adopt rats, they go on to be rat owners forever. Like, we
rat obsessed.
We will see them back. So we often have a rat community who will come and adopt. And people always know of what rats we've got up for homing before we even tell anyone. Because, they're very popular.
So a big part of it is the education process. Yeah. How can we stop people, or some people, from being scared of dogs and small animals, particularly if it's an under socialization issue where they just haven't had experience of them? Like, do we do work with people to, like, through our education and outreach?
Yeah, so outreach will go out into different communities and offer talks and advice and support. And here on site, we do regular living with dogs workshops for young children, and we do talks for adults as well that are thinking of getting into owning a dog. It's the good, the bad and the ugly truth about living with dogs. And we're here with they're exactly the kind of people that we want to talk to, that want to go into a relationship with a dog, with any pet, with their eyes wide open. That's so important.
And actually, through doing that, I mean, I know some of the staff take their dogs that have been approved to do so into schools, and for the kids to learn some basic tricks, and like you say, recognising dog body language.
Yeah, which is,
so even if they don't own a dog, they can still learn all that.
Yes.
And maybe we all know that if kids learn things at a younger age, they're more likely to carry that on, whereas it's us stubborn adults that don't change easily. Have you come across any cases, Sue? I mean, you work with a lot of families with their dogs, variety of issues. Have you come across any families with, you know, real phobia of dogs that you've been able to help? Can you help?
Numerous. And yes, you can. Are you ever going to cure it 100%? I don't believe so. But can you get to a point where you can control your emotions? Then yes. And there are some, yes, you're going to turn around. So one case that comes to mind is a young boy playing out in the park, and a stray dog comes in, gets over aroused by all these kids running and screaming, and plows into one of them. And anyway, to cut a long story short, The boy received a very, very serious bite to his head, unfortunately. And that hospitalised him for quite a while. He then came out of hospital, and dogs were an absolute no-no to him. An absolute justifiable reason for him to be so, so terrified. And it's heartbreaking to see a young child crying just at the thought of a dog being outside the door. That was so sad. But we paired up with a child specialist, and we worked with them, and through very gradual exposure to dogs, we did get to the point where his family did end up adopting a dog. It was a completely different size, shape and colour to the one that had the he had the incident with. But he has grown in confidence as the years have gone by. There is that certain type of dog he would never wish harm to, but he'll never own as an adult himself. But he can control his emotions when around them, which is great, really great.
Really mature for a child to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a gradual process. Yeah. I mean, apart from the lady you spoke about with the rats that obviously you spent a lot of time throughout the day with, we find that most people that are scared of dogs, it takes, if they find a dog that they're okay with, it takes quite a few visits, doesn't it, Sue,
to really does.
Get them and to the point where they might feel comfortable rehoming that dog.
Yeah, and it doesn't fix the I'm scared of all dogs problem because from a Chihuahua to a Great Dane, they all look different and they all behave differently. So, yeah, if you went past lovely, goofy family pets every single day, that would be really, really nice. But there are always going to be some dogs that are shouting at other dogs or shouting at the postman and shouting at cars and scaring people.
But can people that are scared of dogs or have phobias of dogs live comfortably with one?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, providing the pressure is off them to do anything with that dog. So if you're looking at a scenario where one child is frightened and the other child isn't, and mum and dad want one, so it's three versus one, and they bring a dog home, so long as no pressure is put on that child to do anything, then... yes, I would say it could work. If my sister had wanted a pet tarantula growing up, providing her bedroom door was triple locked, I'd maybe...
You'd be fine. I think we need to do some work with you, with your spider fear. That's what's come tonight.
A money spider.
No, it'll be all right. It's house spiders now.
Is that fair on the dog or the small animal, if you put that animal into a situation where one of the family members does not want it in their room, does not want to handle it, does not want to see it? Do we need to do some work with that family before they take that dog or small animal home?
I think the person would need some coping strategies, and there 100%. Would have to be ground rules in place to exactly say the dog never go. If that was the case, I'd have the baby gate at the bottom of the stairs and the whole of upstairs would be dog free. That child has to have a safe place in the home. And it would also, we'd have to look at the level of their reaction. If they're going to scream and cry and run as soon as they lay eyes on the dog, no, that's not fair on the dog at all. They just don't. If they could just get to the point of, oh God, it's the dog again, you know, and just not have to interact, but not be at that point of an involuntary response, behavioural response. If they can control it, that would be fine. If it's involuntary, then no.
So it's going to have to be the right dog. And it's something that if they came to us, or small animal, we could support them through the 100%. Process and when the dog or small animal goes home.
Oh, I think that's another really great thing about the teams, really, is actually that they stay in contact and, you know, we're always there. So the aim is that we can see that family through with that pet in its entire life. You know, we'll be there to support them with behaviour or if they have any other types of advice or anything like that, we can just be there. And also some owners like to just send us in how happy they are.
But it's a great feel-good factor, isn't it, when you've homed an animal and you're in touch with the people and then they're sending you emails and photographs and then you send it out to the team and say, oh, who remembers Rover? And everyone's like, oh wow. And it's just, you know, you see them when they come in, what they go through, and then go home again, and it's just that, oh, job well done. Happy people, happy pets.
And kids have been particularly, we talked about kids, a big part of it, a big part of, you know, animal phobia. They're pretty resilient, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't want to dismiss it as something small because a phobia is a massive thing. But we have worked with families that have come so far and have walked in and we've thought, oh, I don't know if they're going to get to the point where they're going to be able to rehome that mouse or that dog. Yeah. And just finding the right pet and giving them the right advice and supporting them through the process can make a massive difference rather than just going online and
picking it on the photo. And I think that's also just helping the owner to recognise that it isn't going to be about that they're picking that one because they like the look of it and that they're doing it for this reason. Yeah. It's we want to support you to find you're choosing a family member at the end of the day.
Personality matching is so
important, you know, and we just, I think that's a big thing for dogs, small pets, whatever pet you're taking on with, it's actually finding that right personality. So it doesn't matter what, you know, you've got to get past what the appearance you think you are looking for.
Definitely.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
Exactly. 100%.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Marie and Sue. It's been a pleasure. It's been really interesting. And thank you very much for listening and watching.